So, yeah, anyway, speaking of uncanny, the Noid is back.
Depths of Wikipedia.
You're listening to Depths of Wikipedia with Annie Rowarda and Ha-Jin Yu.
Nick Assman.
Funny, he never married.
The Battle of the Joshes.
I thought this was a metaphor.
A place known as the Body Farm.
This place got old man stink.
Harry Ball. It's time to invoke the first law of holes.
Oh, bodega cat!
When you're in one...
Tell us about your bike, Alaska.
Stop digging.
Doctor, what about the newest
highway hypnosis? Yay.
A ghost mall.
Press any key to continue.
Depths of Wikipedia.
Hello, and welcome back to the Depths of Wikipedia podcast. I'm your host, Ha-Jin. I'm joined by my co-host, bestie, Annie, as always.
Hello. I can't wait for this topic today. We're talking about not just fast food mascots, but cursed fast food mascots. To just get people excited, I had a few trivia questions. So, Ha-Jin, Seth, our producer, are you ready for some trivia about fast food mascots, particularly cursed fast food mascots?
Yeah.
Boy, are we ever.
Gidget, a chihuahua, was the mascot of this Mexican-inspired eatery from 1997 to 2000. He later appeared as Bruiser's mom in Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde. What's the restaurant?
Taco Bell. I was alive for this. I remember the Taco Bell dog. And then he died. I remember when he died. I was like, dang.
You remember that? I was actually going to bring that up. Did he die the same year that Michael Jackson did?
Yes, and Farrah Fawcett. It was a big deal. I was like, wow, they always come in threes.
Okay, next up. Supposedly based on a 16th century Norse woodcut of a twin-tailed mermaid. The mascot of this coffee chain has undergone changes to make it more family friendly, like getting rid of the exposed breasts and appearance of widespread legs.
Wow, Starbucks is wild for removing the nipple. I think they should bring the exposed breast back. I think the world's ready.
I think so too.
The world's ready.
Okay, piping hot takes already. All right, next one.
Put it on the Christmas
card. Were we right?
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. This restaurant's ads show cows advocating for the murder of a different farm animal. What's the restaurant?
Chick-fil-A,
yeah.
Yeah.
Also, for some reason, like, they just don't know how to spell correctly. I don't know why that detail was added, but, their ad campaigns are, like, chicken, and there's, like, an extra C missing.
Imagine kinda being weird. In that boardroom and being like, you know what? Like some, like, yuppie goes to the screen with their presentation, and they're like, I know, guys, like, a bunch of cows. They can't spell, and they want to live. They desperately want to live. Like, it's just creepy. I think it's really
pretty... weird.
And they advocate really for the murder of another animal.
Yeah.
Dark implications.
Fred the Baker was a popular advertising character portrayed by actor Michael Vale in commercials for what American chain from 1981 to 1997? The big hint is that his catchphrase was, time to make the donuts.
Arby's?
So close. Try again.
Okay, honestly, is it Dunkin' Donuts or is it Krispy Kreme? Like, it could be either.
Well, I'm gonna wait. What was the time period?
81 to 97.
I'm gonna say, because I'm totally unfamiliar, it's Dunkin'.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. None of these are that hard. Next question is about
the popular slogan is "I'm loving it."
This is not about fast food. Just a really fun mascot. Fatso the Fat Arsed Wombat was an unofficial... You guys are laughing already?
Oh my god.
Easy crowd today. Was an unofficial mascot of the 2000 Olympics in what city?
Oh, it's Melbourne. No, Sydney?
Yeah, it's Sydney.
Sydney, I'm sorry, Australia.
What was the name of that mascot?
Fatso the Fat Arsed Wombat. Unofficial mascot. Official enough to have its own Wikipedia page. So
okay.
Check that out, folks.
Next one. This gun organization has a controversial mascot named Eddie Eagle, who is supposed to teach gun safety to kids.
Controversial gun organization. I'm gonna say Arby's again.
The Muppets?
It's so the NRA.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay. Today we're talking about fast food, and if the words Noid, McWords, and Curse of the Colonel mean nothing to you, they will be near and dear to your heart by the end of our time together. Wow. Domino's Pizza. Thoughts, Annie?
It's good. Solid.
It's good. Solid. And you know why it's good and solid?
No, tell me.
Because Domino's Pizza defeated its arch nemesis, the Noid, who specializes in making your pizza not good. So the Noid was this advertising character for Domino's Pizza created in the 1980s. And he's kind of like claymation looking. I'm not really sure what medium they used. A little uncanny valley, in my opinion. He's in like this red skin tight bodysuit with rabbit ears. And he has an N on his chest that stands for Noid. The Noid's occupation, according to the Wikipedia article, is ruining pizza. That's his official job title. And so, like, the idea was, like, that the Noid is this physical manifestation of all of the challenges inherent in getting a pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less, which is, like, Domino's whole thing. The Noid's trying to wreck their plan. So, you know, some of the Noid's antics are like he tries to freeze the pizzas or like stomp on them with a pogo stick so they don't get delivered. But then, of course, despite the Noid's efforts, Domino's Pizza is always delivered and it's always delicious. Yeah, can we play a clip from one of the commercials?
Avoid the Noid with the Domino's Pizza Guarantee. We guarantee your pizza will be delivered within 30 minutes or you get $3 off your order. Guaranteed. And we guarantee your pizza will taste great. If you're not satisfied with your pizza, we'll replace it or refund your money. Only our pizza is guaranteed to avoid the Noid. Domino's Pizza delivers. Call now.
So the really significant part is that the tagline / slogan in these commercials were avoid the Noid, as in like avoid the obstacles to get the good pizza. And it's like a really good way to, I try to avoid your gaze and I look in your camera and you're like in just
I just know where the story is going to go and it's just going to be such a crazy turn.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, like, buckle in. Make sure your socks are glued to your feet because they will be blown away very soon. So before we get there, though, I just think, like, the Noid is, like, such a good way to position your brand. It's like, here's this evil thing, and then we, Domino's Pizza, the good guys, are gonna defeat the evil thing. And then your kid's like, I want Domino's Pizza. So, yeah, the Noid proves to be, like, super popular, like, way more than they were anticipating. We're talking, like, people going into the stores before they even had merch and asking if they had any Noid stuff. They even made a Nintendo video game called Avoid the Noid, which, like, in, like, the 80s, I feel like the ultimate, like, confirmation of popularity is, like, getting a video game made about your brand. There were even talks about a TV show, and super fun fact, he even appeared in Michael Jackson's musical film called Moonwalker. And I know you're like, what? Michael Jackson had a musical film called Moonwalker? And also the Noid was in it. And also Michael Jackson died the same year as the Taco Bell dog. Like, a lot to unpack here. But even more so, there's even more to unpack. And like, this is where things kind of take a dark turn. So in 1989, at the peak of the Noid's fame, there was a man coincidentally named Kenneth Lamar Noid who thought the ad campaign was a personal attack on himself, like the slogan, avoid the Noid, right? He believed that Tom Monaghan, the owner of Domino's, had stolen his name and were making like these like hate campaigns about him. So he went to a Domino's in Chamblee, Georgia, with a gun, and he held two employees hostage. And he demanded the employees to call Domino's HQ, which is in Michigan. Another little shout out to our Lake State. Love it. Pure Michigan. These episodes are getting like progressively pro Michigan. I don't know what's gone into me.
Midwest girls, rise up.
Right, rise up. Anyways, so he demanded the employees to call Domino's HQ for his demands were $100,000 and a white limo as getaway transportation. And then he also requested a copy of The Widow's Son, which is kind of random in my opinion. I don't know. It's like this science fiction novel that's part of the historical Illuminatus Chronicles. I've personally never heard of this book. I've tried looking and I couldn't find anything on why he wanted this book. He actually originally asked for this book as like a trade-off. He was like, hey, if you get me this book, I'll release one of the hostages. And then once he got the book, he actually was like, psych. So yeah, he held them hostage for over 5 hours, and he even made them two pizzas because he eventually got hungry. And it's while he was eating these pizzas, he had his gun in his lap. The hostages were then able to escape at this point. So then Kenneth surrendered to the police shortly afterwards and was arrested. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity, and he spent some time in a mental hospital. Sadly, he committed suicide on February 23rd, 1995. And that same year, Domino's Pizza discontinued the Noid as their mascot. But the weird part is that they say that this decision had nothing to do with Kenneth Noid. Which they still claim to this day. And that is significant because, guys, 2020 was a hard year for all of us, right? I mean, crazy stuff happened. And the big boys over at Domino's HQ, they thought, hey, you know what the world needs? On April 2021, Domino's YouTube channel uploaded a video called The Return of the Noid. It's part of Domino's new service where they have these like self-driving pizza delivery cars, and then the Noid comes in and tries to like stop the car. So it's pretty like, you know, future forward, or, you know, it's very of this time. And the Noid is like, it's just back at full throttle. The Noid even has like NFTs and Funko Pops, like two of the most 2021 features of like our culture and society. The Noid even has its own Twitter account at The Noid. You can go tweet at him if you want. Personally, like, I don't think they're doing a great job with the Twitter. I think there's a lot more they could be doing, and they haven't really posted that much.
Everyone, PSA, if anyone from Domino's HQ in Michigan is listening to this, we have a Michigan native who did study marketing, so so hit up Hajin.
And I personally love Domino's. I use your app all the time. So, you know, just help a girl
make
out.
Make this girl annoyed.
Make me the face of Domino's. Forget the Noid. Anyways, so yeah, on their Twitter, the Noid is like, hey, buy my NFTs. So you could buy his weapons, like the Pizza Crusher and the Pizza Slicer, which were, you know, these weapons he used on these commercials. And they sold for about 0.085 Ethereum, which is like about $200. So I don't know. It's not crazy, but then also like, I don't know. Someone paid $200 for the Noid NFT, which is just, I don't like that combination of words. Very anachronistic. Wait, am I saying that word right? Anachronistic. Anachronistic. Chronistic?
They know what you mean.
Help me out, Seth.
Anachronistic.
That was like the voice of God.
He sounded like the Iridocyclitis guy.
Play a clip of him.
Iridocyclitis.
It was uncanny. Anyway, speaking of uncanny, back to the Noid. The Noid is back. And the weird thing is that, like, I don't know, like, I feel like Domino's is kind of weird for bringing it back, and they maybe thought, like, no one would remember it, but, like, consider this podcast episode as a PSA and a way to spread the news about what happened with the Noid, and let's just not revive that, right?
I think it sounds like it was very traumatic. I think that it's fine to let things die. Maybe bring back a new mascot, like Hajid, for example.
Yeah, Jin. Domino's HQ, if you guys are listening, I'm a Michigan native. I love my home state. Grand Rapids, born and bred. Love social media. So, you know, just if you're interested, give me a DM. Anyways, that was the Noid.
Depths of
Wikipedia.
Before we go into our next one, which is KFC related, I was like, well, how can we talk about cursed fast food if we don't talk about McDonald's at least a little bit? There's a whole Wikipedia page about McWords, which are when you take the naming conventions of McDonald's, like McRib, McDouble, McFlurry, McMuffin, McCafe, McDonald's, and you put them on other words not officially related to McDonald's to convey something about globalization. So I'm going to read the description of these things, and then you have to guess the McName. So.
Oh, so fun.
First one, a mega church.
A McChurch.
Ding, ding, ding. Next one, a low-paying job in which one serves as an interchangeable cog in a corporate machine.
A McJob.
Ding, ding, ding. You win.
Seth, you can play here. I know these are kind of hard, but you know, don't know. Feel...
Those last two have me stumped.
Don't feel intimidated.
This next one is objectively pretty hard. People who stay overnight in a 24-hour McDonald's.
A McZombie.
Nope. It's McRefugee.
This is a lot of syllables.
Yikes.
A quickly built mansion or a group of large houses built in the same style in the same area.
That is a McMansion.
Right? It is a McMansion. Fantastic blog, McMansion Hell. Check it out by Kate Wagner. She's an architecture student, and she just like analyzed McMansions in very funny detail.
Oh, that's so fun.
Okay, next one. A term referencing privately owned nuclear weapons associated with the political philosophy of anarcho-capitalism.
Is it McArsenal?
It's McNuke.
Nice.
I would
nice.
Order a McNuke.
Oh man, they don't have these on the menu.
The McDuke is back.
A newspaper that is considered manufactured and for the masses because of its simplistic prose style and flashy use of colors, typically used in reference to USA Today.
McNews.
Ding ding ding.
See, the key here is not to think hard about it.
It truly is. It truly is.
Yeah, do not overthink it. Okay, this is the last one and my personal favorite. A martial arts school seen as sacrificing pedagogic principles in favor of offering rapid advancement through the various ranks, often requiring a fee to be paid to achieve a higher rank, often denoted by a colorful belt. Hence, the use of another pejorative name, belt factory, analogous to a degree mill.
That was a lot of words, and I'm not really sure how it's all connecting.
McKarate?
So close.
Mick. Wait. Mick. Mick Taekwondo.
McDojo.
Oh.
Thanks for playing. Great job. Some of those were
thanks for hosting, Mick host. Thanks for your Mick questions.
You're so welcome. You're the best Mick contestants I've ever met. Without further...
Now, Seth, go back to your Mick hole.
Mick bye.
Mick next up, we have to fly all the way to Japan.
Woo!
Depths of
Wikipedia.
I have to tell you that in Japan, KFC appears on street corners with a frequency that rivals Starbucks. Japan is the third biggest KFC market in the world behind China and the US. This mostly started with this 1974 ad campaign, which included the slogan, "Eat Kentucky for Christmas," which obviously they don't mean the whole state. They mean the finger looking good fried chicken that KFC sells.
Right.
Another thing that you need to know about Japan is that they have baseball leagues, and they're huge baseball fans. The fans, according to one Reddit commenter, apparently clap throughout the game and are much more enthusiastic than U.S. fans. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what one person said. So in 1985, Japan was having its championship game of baseball. It was the equivalent of the World Series, and the Hanshin Tigers won for the first time in 34 years, and the crowd went absolutely wild. The fans, who were so excited, that one newspaper described them as rabid, they ran and they started their tradition, which in Japan, the tradition is if you win a game, you go over a bridge and then player lookalikes will jump into the water in celebration. So you'll go through the roster and the player lookalikes will jump in the water and everyone cheers, yay, hooray, hooray, and then the players swim away and get out. So anyway, they were going through the list, and eventually they get to star slugger Randy Bass. A little bit more about star slugger Randy Bass is that he was American, and he came to Japan in the 80s to play baseball. And then, in a really unusual career trajectory, he went on later in life to become an Oklahoma state senator, which is a pretty fun fact. He
real Forrest Gump.
Truly, truly. He looks like how you would expect an Oklahoma state senator to look. Just like a...
like Colonel Sanders.
A bit like Colonel Sanders. He does have a beard. He is like... he has rosy cheeks. He's white, which was an issue because there weren't any Caucasian people in the crowd that were willing to jump off of the bridge. Luckily, the rabid crowd found some solutions. They ran to KFC, yanked the Colonel Sanders statue from the building, and they threw it into the river. Super fun for a while. It was in all the newspapers. Everyone was so excited. But then when the Hanshin Tigers had an 18-year-long losing streak, people started to get a little suspicious of Colonel Sanders and started realizing that maybe they should not question the power of 11 herbs and spices. He was known to be a hothead in his life. Apparently one employee made eggs wrong, and so Colonel Sanders threw a chair at him. So honestly, like, of all the people to put a curse on a team for throwing like a statue of you in the river, I think Colonel Sanders is definitely a possibility.
That's so interesting, though, that, like, this team lost for 18 years and they had to, like, look past and be like, oh, maybe this could be it. Like, how, like, they went that far back and they were just, like, suddenly so sure that it might have been Colonel Sanders' ghost. Like, that was the conclusion.
It's definitely not an issue with the players. It must be the ghost of Colonel Sanders. It's not us. I feel like teams love to have all these like mythologies, like the curse of the Bambino, right, which is the Boston Red Sox when they had 86 years without a win in the World Series, or the curse of the Billy Goat, 108 years without a World Series win for the Chicago Cubs. Anyway, so to try to stop this losing streak, people would dive into the river and try to find Colonel Sanders' statue. Unfortunately, few were successful. The missions sometimes were even televised, and like still they weren't able to find him. Really sad. But eventually some divers who weren't even looking found him in March of 2009. They were able to get him out of the river. He looked, you know, like has the classic grin, but was definitely covered in algae. And unfortunately, his left hand and glasses were never found. This might be shocking to you, but even after they pulled him out of the river, the losing streak kind of continued. Like, it definitely was not a crazy turnaround in their performance. And so people have postulated that perhaps it's because the missing glasses and hand. Like, maybe all we need is those glasses and hand, and then the Tigers are going to be winning everything.
But imagine if they do find it, and then they do win. I mean, hello, Hollywood, it's your next best picture, The Curse of the Colonel, but it's an all-white cast. Because you know Hollywood will. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Curse of the Colonel.
The Curse of the Colonel. I read a little bit more about Colonel Sanders because I was curious, and he's a real person, unlike Ronald McDonald or the Jack in the Box guy, which the Jack in the Box guy's
Wendy's
head is a ping pong ball. Wendy actually is a real person. Hmm. Her name is...
What?
I know. Well,
is Wendy.
Yeah, so Dave Thomas started Wendy's, and his daughter is Melinda Lou Thomas, and then she got married, so it's Melinda Lou Morse. She was born in Columbus, Ohio, and she couldn't say her R's or L's when she was little, so Melinda turned into, like, Mowinda, and it became Wendy, and that's the restaurant what? Name.
Wendy is a real person. Okay. And so is Colonel Sanders.
So is
a person and a veteran and colonel.
He does it all. A bit of a Forrest Gump, if you will. He was born in Southern Indiana in 1890. He left the house at 13 after getting in a fight with his stepfather.
Wow.
He worked odd jobs until he was 40. He had a bit of a temper, so he struggled to keep jobs. But when he was 40... he started selling chicken from his gas station in Corbin, you guessed it, Kentucky. That's where the whole KFC thing was born, like the 11 herbs and spices, the friendly old man in a linen suit and a cane. Eventually, after his original restaurant burned down and a highway was built, like that was away from the restaurant, diverting a lot of traffic away from him, he started franchising, and the first franchise was in Salt Lake City. So that's the Curse of the Colonel. Overall, I would say the lesson is to never question Colonel Sanders, never question the power of 11 herbs and spices, and please stay vigilant.
So powerful. Wait, just a note about these 11 herbs and spices. So it's like this big secret, right?
Huge secret.
But... it's huge. But then on the Colonel Sanders Wikipedia article, the 11 herbs and spices, that phrase is like blue. It's like a hyperlink. I click on it. The recipe for KFC is on Wikipedia. Yeah, like a nephew by marriage. He apparently found like the original recipe, and people tinkered with it, and then they added a bit of MSG, and then they ate it, and they said it was virtually no different than the KFC one. So I don't know if you're looking for a fun Pinterest project to try. Try the Wikipedia article, 11 herbs and spices chicken recipe.
Wait, yeah, here it is. Are you ready for the 11?
Oh my gosh. Oh, this is a Depths of Wikipedia exclusive. We are dropping.
We are dropping the KFC recipe. Please tape your socks on. Sit down. If you are driving, please pull over.
Please pull over and listen to these 11 herbs and spices.
Number one, salt. Number two, thyme. Three, basil. Oregano. Celery salt. Black pepper. Dry mustard. Paprika, garlic salt, ginger, and white pepper.
And a bit of MSG.
A bit of MSG, and you mix all that with 2 cups of flour. And then bada bing, bada boom. I just feel like...
bada bing, bada boom.
I keep thinking about, like, the Krabby Patty recipe in SpongeBob. Just, like, super secret fast food recipes that probably aren't even that crazy. Tune in next week, and we're going to tell you the Coca-Cola recipe.
Yeah, it's super exclusive, Depths of Wikipedia news. Anyways, that was our episode of cursed fast food mascots. Stick around after the credits for a special little segment.
Depths of Wikipedia.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Depths of Wikipedia podcast with your hosts Annie Rowarda and Hajin Yu. The main and accompanying theme was composed by Kyle Imperator. This episode was produced by Seth Glicksman. For more Depths of Wikipedia content, be sure to follow @Depths of Wikipedia on Instagram and TikTok. And remember, chances are you can get this week's wiki article on a mug at depthsofwikipedia.com. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you heard it. And now, your weekly segment.
Depths of Wikipedia.
Hajin and our producer Seth, I have two truths and a lie. I have three Wikipedia articles that all have to do with food or fast food, and you have to guess which one I made up. Two are true, one is fake. The first one, Conflict Kitchen. A Pittsburgh takeout restaurant exclusively serving ethnic foods from countries in which the United States is in conflict. Number two. The Coroner's Cafe. A Dallas area restaurant in the former home of serial killer Jacob Barley, which has seven sandwiches, each named after a woman that Barley killed.
A woman?
Yeah. These are all kind of problematic. Number three, The Shed at Dulwich. A garden shed became a top-rated London restaurant on TripAdvisor after the site was tricked by fake reviewers in 2017. So all three of these have a Wikipedia article, except that one is fake. So there's Conflict Kitchen, Coroner's Cafe, The Shed.
Okay, can you describe The Shed again?
Yeah. I was confused about that.
A Vice journalist tricked say that five times fast. Tricked TripAdvisor into like listing this random garden shed as one of the top restaurants because they got a bunch of people to give it amazing reviews. And so
it's people not were a trying to go.
People were trying to go eat dinner at this random garden shed.
Seth, you're in Pennsylvania, aren't you? Have people ever talked about this Pittsburgh restaurant?
The Conflict Cafe. So here's the thing. I know about the third one. The third one.
Yeah, I saw the Vice documentary.
Is real.
Yeah.
But the Conflict Cafe, it's that sounds so familiar, but the second one sounds just as reasonable. Like I could imagine.
Or are you thinking of Seven, the movie directed by David Fincher?
You're probably right. I'm probably thinking about Seven, the movie directed by Academy
David
Award
Fincher.
Nominee David Fincher.
1994. Damn. Yeah. I'm gonna have to confess something. When we began this two truths, one lie,
oh my God.
I had a good feeling that I was, gonna win.
You had a good feeling. Well, I feel like you have an even better feeling now that at least one of them is ruled out.
That's true. But actually, in fact, two of them are ruled out because I remember seeing Conflict Kitchen on the internet. So my answer is two. Yeah, this is a bigger twist than Seven, directed by David Fincher, Academy Award nominee, 1994.
Starring Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. Yes, this
and
is
Gwyneth
even
Paltrow.
Bigger than that.
And Kevin Spacey, although he's canceled.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Annie,
the floor
can
has fallen out from below you, Annie.
So, Seth, what do you think? Do you agree that it's the Coroner's Cafe?
Yeah, Coroner's Cafe is the murder victim sandwiches. I
Coroner's Cafe is fake.
You trust the fact that Hajin's memory of something she saw on the internet is correct?
I can't help but trust anyone.
Oh my gosh, Annie is gaslighting you, okay? I am telling the truth. Annie is a gaslighter through and through.
No, see, that's the thing. I can't
That
help
should
but
be
trust
the intro
anybody.
For this episode.
I think I'm gonna go with Hajin on this.
Wow. So for the first time in history on the Death of Wikipedia podcast, we have two people that got the final segment absolutely correct.
I'm kinda nervous.
Congratulations.
Okay.
Ding ding ding.
Nice.
I was kinda nervous for a minute.
Well, your memory served you well. Oh my God. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on the Depths of Wikipedia podcast. Never question the power of 11 herbs and spices. Avoid the noid and have a great week.
And watch Seven over the weekend.